Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Visit audiblepodcast.com/auctionpodcast for your free audiobook download. Hi, everyone. This is Martin Willis on the Antique Auction Podcast Show. I'm here solo today. We have quite a monsoon, and Phyllis can't make it, but we have a great phone guest, Darren Julian of Julian Auctions. Hello, Darren. How are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
Doing really well. You have some weather down there as well, huh?
Yes, we do, but not keeping the Barbra Streisand fans out of the exhibition.
Ah, all right. That's good. You always find they always make it to no matter what the weather is when it's something like that, huh?
Yeah. Especially when it's for Barbra Streisand.
Right, right. Well, I was there, I think it was it 5 years ago at your Barbra Streisand sale?
Yep.
And that was very interesting. I was actually very impressed with the way that auction ran. And by the way, you had a great auctioneer as well. So what's this? Why don't you talk a little bit about what's up with the Barbra Streisand items this time?
Well, you know, the sale we did for her in 2004, it was a great opportunity for us. Barbara worked with us. It was the first single owner sale we did on our own. And as I always tell everybody, that the other celebrities looked at Barbara and looked at Julian's and said, well, if they can make Barbra Streisand happy and do a first-class job, then they can, you know, work with us. And, you know, we went on to do an auction for the estate of Marilyn Monroe, for Cher, Madonna. We've done a couple of auctions for you too, but Barbara's really been very important to Julian's auction. So, wow. We are now doing, a major auction for her. And about a year ago, she had contacted us and said, you know, I'd really like to do something again for my foundation where all the money goes to the Barbra Streisand Foundation. And, you know, just discuss the possibility of doing a bigger sale. So, we explained to her, you know, and she had received the catalog we did for Cher and said, we'd really love the opportunity to do an auction for you that consists of fine and decorative art and items from your, you know, like costumes and jewelry from your career. Mm. So it didn't take a lot of convincing, and she was, we spent the last year working with her. She ended up and gave up more items than what I think she originally intended to, and to our surprise, you know, gave us some really great items for this auction.
Yeah, I was looking through some of the pieces, and I do remember when she was buying the Stickley furniture for, actually it was making quite a stir. Some of the pieces she paid quite a bit of money for, and beautiful pieces. I saw that you were offering some of those as well.
Yes, we are. And, you know, Barbara is really the one that created the collectability in the Stickley movement a number of years ago. But, you know, Stickley's always been highly collectible, but I firmly believe that she's the reason for it being as high and at the levels that they are today. But she's given us some great pieces of Stickley furniture, you know, from her collection. And, you know, we have everything on display here in Beverly Hills. You saw the exhibition that we did in 2004. Well, this one is a lot better from the standpoint that it's like walking into her home. And we have the items displayed so that it gives fans and collectors, as they come into the exhibition, the feeling that they're actually walking through Barbra Streisand's house.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit. Where, first of all, the date of the auction is the 17th and 18th, is that right, of October?
Yes, it is. And, yes, the 18th, it's a Saturday and Sunday.
And the exhibition's going on now. And where is that? For the person out there that may be listening to this, where is this being held exactly?
Well, it's, the exhibition is free to the public, and so is the auction. You can attend at no cost. And it's at the Beverly Hilton, and it's at the old Trader Vic's restaurant at the Beverly Hilton. So, you know, Trader Vic's was an old Hollywood landmark for many years, and it just closed down. But we've temporarily turned it into a Barbra Streisand museum.
Whoa.
And you can, you know, park at the Beverly Hilton. There's a lot of signs to show you where to go. But, you know, we have a really, you know, the costumes are on mannequins. And It's just really, really a great walk through time.
Wow, that's amazing. Let's turn back a little bit. How did you get started in the auction business? How did you get into the celebrity items?
Well, I used to run a company called Cruise International. We did classic car auctions for many years. I'm from Indiana.
Oh yes, I know of them. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I had in 1999, Sotheby's had offered me a position to come out to California. But at the car auctions, we would always open the car auctions with memorabilia. And I was always far more fascinated with the memorabilia than I was with the car auctions. But as a result of working with Cruise, you know, I met Johnny Cash, Jay Leno, Larry Hagman, a lot of Hollywood celebrities. And when Sotheby's had offered me this position to move to Los Angeles, I took them up on it because it was a great opportunity, and it was really towards more of a passion of mine, which is the I love auctions, and I like the the collectibles and the memorabilia side of it. Mm-hmm. And when I moved out to California, it was right about the same time that Sotheby's and Christie's had the price fixing issue.
Oh yes.
So they both of them let go of their departments, and I put together a business plan with Sotheby's and said, listen, I would love to continue to do these entertainment auctions for you. I'll hire some of your previous collectible staff, and you send all the referrals our way. So the past 10 years, Sotheby's has referred all their collectibles items to us. And in the meantime, over the past 10 years, we've become known as the auction house to the stars. So we literally, get a lot of calls from celebrities wanting us to do single owner sales, like what we've done for Barbara Streisand and Cher.
Now, don't you collaborate with Christie's as well?
We did for a period of time.
Oh,
and
I see.
What happened there was we did the Johnny Cash sale with Sotheby's after Johnny's passing. And, Sotheby's wouldn't co-brand the sale, which was a Sotheby's, we wanted it to be a Sotheby's Julian's auction.
Sure.
And we did a auction with Christie's. They contacted us then and said, listen, we'd love to collaborate with you and do a year contract where we do co-branded sales. We're willing to put Julian's on our catalog. And so we did that for a year. And then after our last auction with Christie's, Sotheby's came back and said, listen, we would like to continue to work with you. And we will put your name on the catalog. So we did the share auction that we did in 2007 was the most recent auction that we did with Sotheby's. We have good relationships with both Sotheby's and Christie's. As with most industries, you don't burn bridges.
Right.
So, we're fortunate from the standpoint that they both send us referrals, and we both send them referrals on a lot of clients that contact us about selling fine art.
Mm-hmm. So way back when you were with Cruise, I imagine, there were the auctions such as the Andy Warhol auction with the cookie jars that I think went for like $300,000 at the time. Then there was the JFK auction and the Jackie Kennedy Onassis auction. Were you following those auctions at the time?
I was, and I was always very fascinated with them. And I was more fascinated with, the assembly of preserving the history of these items, when you put together the catalogs, and this is what I always tell our celebrity clients, is that when you put together these catalogs, you preserve the history of these items forever because they're forever documented that they came from the celebrity's collection.
Exactly.
And, then I'm also fascinated with the marketing aspect where, one of our niches, so to speak, is that we not only tour the highlights around to different countries and different museums around the world when we're promoting a sale. For example, like Barbara Streisand, we were on the Queen Mary 2 with an exhibition in August, headed over to London from New York. So it was a six-day exhibition aboard the Queen Mary 2. And we gave talks about working with Barbara, building the auction. And, and it's great because that's the type of exposure that's important to us, is to getting to know a new client base. And then we did an exhibition at a museum of style icons in near Dublin in Ireland. Then we did the Today Show in New York City, and then here to Los Angeles. So we tour the highlights, and you know, we don't just have an auction room where we put the items up for sale, but we make it, we take the items to the people so that they can see them, view them, and it also ends up and creates excitement and press in all the different countries that we travel to.
I can't think of anyone else that's ever done anything like that. Do other auction houses do this in any form at all?
No, we're the only ones because it's rather expensive.
Oh, yeah.
But what we've started to do is to get companies to underwrite us because, you know, like Cunard, for example, with the Queen Mary 2, it's their demographics. And they like the fact that we go on the Today Show and talk about how the items were exhibited on the Queen Mary 2. You know, so for them to cover our expenses and the cost to transport these items, you know, it benefits them because they get additional marketing and they get the association with the celebrity.
Yeah. I'm sure it must have been, was it a little bit of a tough pitch at first or did it work right away?
No, it was a very tough pitch at first. And in fact, the first exhibitions that we did, we covered all the expenses to show to our clients and potential sponsors down the road that we could make it beneficial for them. So now we have, you know, many museums around the world that will underwrite us for certain exhibitions because they know that we'll, you know, generate press and excitement for them and get their brand out there. In addition to, it'll drive traffic to the various museums to come and see the items.
Right, right. Well, I've heard, you know, a lot of museums are hurting a little bit, but the attendance is higher at museums than in the past, but it's just the funding and things that they're losing out on, I guess. But
And when we did the Michael Jackson, you know, as you may know, we were hired by Michael Jackson to clear out Neverland, and then he stopped the sale at the last minute.
Yes, I wanted to talk to you about that.
And when we did the exhibition in a museum, who knows? They in 10 days, they had 30,000 people come through.
Can you repeat that last?
So it was massive, I mean, for them. So it was a revenue generator for them as well.
Okay, and what, we cut out for just a second, the phone cut out for just a second because of this weather. What museum was this at, please?
It was the Museum of Style Icons in County Kildare, Ireland.
I see.
People were flying, fans were flying in from London and Spain, all over Europe, just to come in and see these items firsthand of Michael Jackson.
I'm sure. So let's talk a little bit about that whole situation, because that I certainly saw it in the news every day, and created quite a stir. Now that auction was ultimately canceled. But you did okay overall, even though, wasn't it just a few days before the auction when it was canceled?
Yes. You know, we've had a long-term relationship with Michael Jackson, and we don't fault him for anything that happened. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't him that filed a lawsuit against us to stop the sale. It was his manager. So we had, you know, worked with him very closely for about 9 months clearing out Neverland, and at the last minute, when he announced his new comeback tour, his management firm had filed a lawsuit with us against us to stop the sale, claiming that we stole the items. Well, you know, we were clearly given complete access to Neverland for 3 months to take the items out to prepare for the auction. And so, long story short, we had worked everything out with Michael. We were compensated for our efforts, and you know, everything was good in the end. And in fact, Michael, before his unfortunate death, had invited us to come to his concert in London at the opening. So we had remained on good terms with them, and to this date, we're on very good terms with his family and with the estate.
Sure, boy, what was that like being in Neverland? That must have been something else.
You know, it's like everything else. You know, when you're in the middle of it all doing it, you don't really grasp what you're working on. And for us, I just saw all the pressure that we had to get everything out in 90 days. Wow. And it literally took us 30 men, and we had to try to do all this confidentially so that nobody knew what was going on. And we had 10 semi-trailers, you know, and we filled them all up, and, you know, and it took us literally 9 months to photograph and catalog everything.
Wow. I saw some show one time several years ago when he was on a shopping spree buying these huge urns and all kinds of things. I think he spent like a few million dollars in a short period of time, and I believe, I may be wrong, but I thought it was in Las Vegas, but I'm not positive on that. But I was amazed at what he was just buying here and there.
Yeah, I was at the Venetian in Las Vegas, and he did, and it's a very famous shopping spree that he went on. And many of those items were at Neverland, so a lot of the life-size statues and things like that. But he was definitely someone that loved to buy items, and he was a shopaholic.
Right. Now, you do have some property of his coming up, is that right?
Yeah, we have. What happened after his unfortunate death, we started to get contacted by his family members, like his aunts and, you know, some family members and friends that Michael had given things to over the years. So we do an annual auction every year in New York City at the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square. So we have about 80 items from the life and career of Michael Jackson. And these are all items that come directly from the family members and or the friends that Michael gave them to. But the most historic piece that we have is the white glove from his Motown 25 special.
I saw that.
We estimate 40 to 60,000, but anticipate that it'll sell for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, on something like that, you have absolutely no idea until the bidding starts. I know how that is.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So can you, while we're on this subject, can you think of anything in the past that you sold that just flew way above your expectations like that?
I mean, one piece we had, it was a Jimi Hendrix guitar. We estimated it at $60,000 to $80,000, and it was a studio guitar. It came from his drummer with a letter, and it sold for $480,000. You know, we've sold George Harrison's guitars for as much as $560,000.
Wow.
But honestly, this glove, I think, is probably the most iconic piece that we've ever handled.
I believe you're right.
It's the most iconic piece that you could ever have of Michael Jackson because of the glove and because of the most historic performance of his career.
Now, who's been housing the glove all this time?
It was Walter Orange, who was one of the founding members of the Commodores, and it's a great story behind the glove. You know, Michael, or the Commodores, had opened for the Jackson 5 in the 70s. And when Michael was just a little boy and he was starting to become famous, Walter asked him for his autograph one day. And Michael looked up at Walter and said, "Walter, I'll never give you my autograph because you're more famous than I am." And so they continued that joke over a period of several years, and Michael always refused to give the autograph. So after the Motown 25 performance, which the Commodores performed that night as well, Walter backstage put his arms around Michael and says, "Michael," he goes, "after that performance, you have to give me your autograph." And Michael said, "Walter, I'll never, ever give you my autograph, but you can have my glove."
Wow.
And which, you know, obviously nobody at that time would have thought that that glove would be as significant. You know, what makes it the most significant is that it's when Michael premiered the moonwalk to the world. Mm-hmm. And it's also the first time that he ever performed on stage Billie Jean. So there was two significant performances that night that he made.
Wow. I think you're right. I think that thing is just going to keep going. You know, I mean, that's the only one. You know?
Exactly. Yeah, we have high expectations, but you know, we've got a lot of clients from all over the world flying into New York City in November to bid on it.
Can you name a couple of other highlights that you have?
Yeah, we have one of his bad jackets that he wore on stage during the bad tour, and we have a drawing that he did when he was 9 years old of Charlie Chaplin, and he gave it to his aunt. and Advance consigned it to us. But it's, you know, he was a very prolific artist even at the age of 9, and he signed the painting. And we also have a car that Michael Jackson owned, the Mercedes, and for her 60th birthday, he gave it to his aunt, and it's the only car that we've ever seen photographs of Michael actually driving. Normally, he was always driven by people, but we actually have photographs of him sitting in the car.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. And what are a couple of other things that you have?
We also have 2 outfits from his stage performance at the Apollo Theater, which was his last live stage performance in the United States. We also have a pair of his white sparkly socks that were made by Bill Whitton that he wore on stage. We have several drawings that he had done over, you know, part of his life. Michael loved to draw, so we have many original drawings. One of them is of Mickey Mouse wearing the bat jacket, which is a really, you know, he signed the drawing. And we also have his, you know, from Thriller, we have his fang mold from the mold that they made the fangs from for him to wear.
Wow, wow, that's interesting. Now, where is this auction and when?
That takes place, the highlights are down in Santiago, Chile right now. Then we go over to Europe with the highlights, then Tokyo, and then we arrive in New York City right around November 15th, and we'll have an exhibition there for a week at the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square, and the auction takes place on November 21st at the Hard Rock Cafe Times Square on Saturday, November 21st.
Wow, so that's not too far away. That's coming up.
Yeah, so it's definitely going to get more worldwide attention just because, you know, people are still very much interested in Michael Jackson.
Sure. You know, being in the auction business myself, you always see some weird things happen when someone major, you know, passes away. And right away, within the week, we're getting calls we even had a call. Someone said that they had a Life magazine with Michael Jackson in it. Like, we would sell that at auction. And I do remember way back when Elvis, back in 77, when Elvis died, and there was this big surge of Elvis items everywhere you look. Have you seen a lot of people trying to consign Michael Jackson items to you, other than, you know, what you mentioned, the friends and family?
Yeah, we have. And, you know, it happens every time that a celebrity passes away. You typically see a surge, but especially with Michael Jackson, you know, Michael was highly collectible before he passed away.
That's right.
And now he's, you know, as I say, he's at the level of Marilyn Monroe and Elvis Presley.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, his prices are only going to continue to increase over time.
I believe that's right. I believe that's right. You know, also being in the auction business, I've seen what provenance will do, you know, for a value of items, but what you're dealing with, it seems like you are forging ahead these items that no one else is. And how do you arrive at coming up with estimates when nothing's ever sold for, say, a celebrity before?
Well, what I call them is guesstimates.
Hmm.
Because really, you know, there's no scientific way to come up with an estimate.
Sure.
Typically, you know, we look and see what items have sold out there before. You know, and it's important that you put conservative auction estimates, because if you overvaluate something, you're not going to have people that are registered a bid for the auction. They're not even going to be interested, because they're going to think, well, the reserve.
Oh, you're cutting out again. But I know exactly.
Sorry, I said that, you know, typically you want to have conservative auction estimates, because if things are overvaluated, you won't have people that are registered for the auction, or, you know, because they'll feel it's out of their price range.
Right. And once they...
So, what's that?
Well, once they get involved in the bidding, then the magic happens.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we don't bring in items if the consignor's unrealistic, because there's no sense of bringing something in when their expectations too high and you overprice it. so that you're not going to get interest in the auction. You know, it doesn't do anybody any good. So
right.
We only work with designers that have realistic expectations and that we can, you know that we can perform for them. Because, you know, even celebrities, there's times where a celebrity will have us come into their home, look at items, and if they say, well, these items are worth $1 million, and in reality it's worth $10,000 to $20,000, you know, it's a good idea to walk away, because their
sure.
expectation of themselves is far higher than what the market's willing to spend.
Yeah, you'll never make them happy. And
exactly.
What I've seen and and I've talked to a few different people around the country, and they agree with me, and I'm going to ask you too. Right now, the way the economy kind of affects everything, when I see someone pricing something at auction, and probably about the right estimate, maybe a little strong, it doesn't sell. It's a pass lot. When someone seems to, when you seem to estimate something very conservatively, then it seems to go much higher. You know, I've seen this happen repeatedly. And it just seems to be a trend right now. But I noticed that a lot of things that are even estimated where I think they should fall are not even being bid on because, like you said earlier, people are not getting into the bidding.
Well, that's exactly right. And like the case, when we put together a sale like we did for Barbara Streisand, you know, we estimate everything based upon the value of the pieces as if you or I owned them.
Uh-huh.
Then at the end of the day, you let the market dictate what their true value is, because you rely on the marketing, you have it put out there, you know, that so the right people know about it, and, you know, chances are it's going to sell for more because, you know, the market would, in the end, dictate what the items are actually worth.
Right. I was recently involved in handling several pieces of Merv Griffin's from his estate, and I was a little disappointed that the provenance didn't really seem to matter, but you know, talking with him, you know, Merv Griffin is a real icon and mogul, but he hasn't been in the news for many years, and I think that adds a little bit to it.
Yeah, well, and somebody like Merv Griffin, even though he is a celebrity and most people know who he is, he doesn't have a huge collectability factor himself. Where
mm-hmm.
you
right.
know, if he had been in a film and won an Academy Award and, you know, became an icon, then he has a little bit more of a fan following. You know, that's when you start to see items go much higher than what their actual value is.
Sure, sure. Oh, I got a couple of other questions, a little bit off top where we're at now, but when you sell something, have you ever had this happen? I've had it happen. The reason I'm asking this question is when someone gets involved in the hype of an auction, sometimes and the, you know, the feverish bidding and things go really high. Do you ever have people voice the remorse of bidding too much on something afterwards?
We do, and you know, I've done it myself when I've been in someone else's auction, and mm-hmm. I thought afterwards, why did I buy that? But I know being the auction house, how frustrating it is. I go ahead and I pay for the items, whether I in the end won them or not, because.
Sure.
It is my responsibility, because it's very frustrating as an auction house and as an auctioneer when somebody bids on an item and they change their mind. And we take things like that very seriously.
Sure, you have to.
Typically, if it's over a couple $1,000s, we do pursue it legally.
Yep, you have to. And,
yep.
You know, I don't want to stay on this negative mark, but there is a quite a bit more going on than in the past I've seen this year. There's I do talk to a lot of auctioneers, and a lot of people are flaking on their bids, and I don't really I don't really know why someone expends all the energy into bidding, and then changes their mind. But
it's very disrespectful to the auction house and to the people that consign the property. But at the end of the day, that's why we do take it serious, and we, you know, like I said, we do go after bidders if they don't follow through with their purchases in the end.
Yeah. Now, do celebrities say you get a whole bunch of a collection with memorabilia, and included in that memorabilia, there's items of a certain celebrity. Do they ever bid on their own items to keep them out of the market?
Yeah, once in a while. You know, when something comes up, I mean, a lot of times celebrities try to stop the sale of it. they realized that, you know, if they didn't file a police report or if they gave the items, no way for them to stop it. So,
cutting out again.
Yep. Are you there?
Yeah, you were cutting out a little bit here.
Just talking about that. As, you know, a lot of times, you know, celebrities do have to bid on their own items in order to get them back. So what we do, you know, a lot of celebrities have contacted us about bidding in other auctions for their items for them so that nobody knows that they're bidding on them back because they don't want to pay a higher price just because it's them bidding, and they don't want it publicly known that they're bumped. So that's a complimentary service that we offer to our celebrity clients who many of them, you know, do try to get things back, and especially if there's something historic or...
Well, Darren, can you hear me? Darren, this is... Darren, I think we're going to... Can you hear me now?
Yep, I can hear you.
Where the phone keeps cutting out, I think it's probably the weather. This has been... we probably ought to cut it now while we can still talk to each other in case your line just plain goes dead. So,
okay.
Can you give out your website address?
Sure. It's julianauctions.com. Both are plural. And it's
julianauctions.com. Say that one more time.
Sure. julianauctions.com. That's J-U-L-I-E-N-S auctions.com. And... We're the auction house to the stars.
That's right, and it's been a real pleasure. I've really enjoyed this, and again, I'm sorry we're cutting it short. We're both under very unusual weather systems here. You're down in Beverly Hills, correct, or that area?
That's exactly right. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's been great, and thank you very much, and good luck with your upcoming auctions.
My pleasure. It's been nice talking to you as well.
All right. Take care now.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye. Bye-bye. So that was Darren Julian from Julian Auctions in Beverly Hills. And I do want to apologize to our listeners for the problems we have with the phone and the weather. But we have a lot of nice episodes coming up. And I want to thank you all for listening. And this is Martin Willis signing off.